To order the Finance Committee meeting of Monday, June 23rd, 2025, and ask staff to please call the roll.
Council President Vindiver.
Here. Do you hear me?
Now I did. Thank you. Alder Revere.
Here.
Alder Govindarajan.
Here.
Alder Madison.
Here.
Alder Evers.
Here.
Alder Figueroa Cole.
Here.
Mario Quorum.
Thank you. We have no one registered for general public comment, so that will take us to disclosures and recusals. Are there any disclosures or recusals on today's agenda? Seeing none. Then we'll move to the consent agenda. We will separate items 8 and 9, which are presentations. Are there any other items that members of the body would like to have separated from the consent agenda at this time? President Vindiver?
Do we need to separate item 2 to do what it says in the agenda note?
I'll make it clear that that's the motion, but I don't think we need to separate it unless somebody wants to talk about it. Are there any other items folks would like separated? If not, then with the note that on item 2, the motion will be to re-refer to finance on 7-7 and council on 7-15. Can I get a motion on items 2 through 7, please?
Move to adopt.
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt those with the recommendations therein. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to recording unanimous vote in favor of those items? Seeing no objection, those items are adopted with their recommendations, and that will take us to our discussion items. Item 8 is Legistar 88414, an update on the 2026 operating budget outlook and process, to include a 2024 year-end review and 2025 preliminary outlook. And Dave, I believe I'm handing this over to you.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Let me share my screen. Can everyone see that? Okay. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Finance Committee members. We will be walking through this operating budget overview. Our agenda in that will be to look at the year-end results for 2024 and our the city's annual comprehensive financial report, which will be released this week. Take a preliminary look at 2025 projections, with more to come on that at the end of next month. Talk a little bit about the five-year outlook and then the cost to continue revenue and expenditure assumptions for 2026 and the approach for 2026, along with the budget guidance to agencies that was released a week ago. All right, so we'll start with the year-end review, where we'll cover the annual comprehensive financial report and take a look at general fund actual revenues and expenditures, as well as the general fund balance. So starting with the ACFR, which takes us through actually 2024, December 31st. So for 2024, our net position for primary government, that's basically the city's assets, net of liabilities for our governmental and business type activities. An example of our business type activities would be the utilities, the water utility, for example. That net position is about $2.1 billion, which is up about $246 million from the previous year. Most of that is investments in capital assets, our street infrastructure, equipment, all of the infrastructure under the streets, buildings, and so on. Within that amount, for our business type activities, as I mentioned, our enterprise funds or utilities, That net position was about 1.1 billion, which was up 260 million from 2023. About 190 million of that is for fixed assets for bus rapid transit that were funded by the city and the federal government. Our net general obligation debt is about 681 million, which is a little under 1.5% of our property value, down slightly from 2023. And about $2,341 per capita. That percentage of equalized property value is a measure that we use relative to the constitutional limit, the limit under the state constitution, which is 5% of equalized property value in outstanding general obligation debt. Our total debt was $928 million, so that includes our revenue bonds. And other types of bonds in addition to general obligation. That's about 3.87% of our personal income, so down slightly as a share of personal income from 2023, and about $3,165 per capita. Some other elements of the ACFR, there was some funds transferred from the general fund to a couple of enterprise and internal service funds. You can see the amounts there for transit and for fleet. And that was due to the timing of the receipt of certain revenues between the two fiscal years. Those funds will be returned to the general fund during 2025. We had two new governmental accounting standards boards requirements that we had to put into place. One was for how we present accounting changes and error corrections, and the other was for how we calculate compensated absences and the liabilities associated with that. And both of those were implemented successfully in this report. Total governmental fund balances were $379 million, which is down slightly from 2023. All of this amount, except for the general fund unassigned balance, is classified either as non-spendable, restricted, or assigned for specific purposes. The unassigned general fund balance, which we'll get into a little more detail, is a little under $111 million, which is up about $28 million from 2023, and that represents about 27% of the 2025 budget, and that's the measurement that we use for the size of the general fund balance. And as we've received for many years, the city is expected to receive a certificate for achievement and excellence for financial reporting from the Government Finance Officers Association. There were three internal control findings, and those were that's a part of the work that Baker Tilly does for the city as a part of the external audit contract that it has with the city, a competitively bid contract. The first of those areas of material weakness were in Community Development Authority. Some of the pre-development costs associated with the triangled redevelopment project, those should have been capitalized instead of expensed. For Metro, there was not proper recording of bus disposals and local partner subsidy calculations from prior reporting years. And then with the water utility, they started basically a new program where the PSC allowed them to use expense depreciation, and the way that depreciation was treated was correct from a public service commission perspective, but not from a generally accepted accounting principles perspective. So all three agencies have developed and are implementing new internal control processes to address those material weaknesses. So turning now to a dive into the general fund, and we'll look at actual revenues. So revenues finished about 6% above budget. Most of that is focused in investment income, which was about almost $18 million above the budgeted amount. Now, we've talked about that throughout the past year, that that number would be higher than what was budgeted, and we'll get into that in a little more detail on the next few slides. We saw fines and forfeitures up. That reflects parking violations and the additional staffing for that effort. And licenses and permits, most of that is building permits in 2024 were stronger than estimated in the budget. Otherwise, most of the revenues were close to budgeted amounts. I've shown you these graphs before. This is just a reminder that investment income has gone up dramatically since 2021 with a pretty rapid rate rise in 2022. And those elevated levels have continued through 2023 and 2024 and are expected to continue into 2025. So interest rates averaged about 3.8% in terms of what the city's cash pool is earning in 2023 and 4.4% in 2024. We've also talked a little bit about the mark-to-market adjustment, and that actually went down by $14 million in 2022, but has reversed itself by almost that amount over the past 2 years. Again, mark-to-market is the calculation that's made at the end of every calendar year, which is the city's fiscal year, and looking at the gain or loss when we compare our actual investment, our par value of our investments to the market. And we did have that investment loss, which is the red line. You'll see mark-to-market as the red line in this graph. We had that loss in 2022, and we've seen that we've seen net positives in 23 and 24. Just again, a reminder, we've set aside $5 million in the assigned general fund balance to offset any future large drops in mark-to-market. In addition, the interest earnings were affected by a cash pool that's outside of the city, and that is money held by Hartford Insurance for our employee life and disability insurance, but that shows up as an assigned fund balance for the city. The blue line is our interest earnings, and you can see that rapid increase, continued increase in 2024, and then what we expect to see happen in 25 and 26. So moving from revenues to expenditures in the general fund, expenditures were $8 million below the final budgeted amounts. Most of that was in the miscellaneous appropriations area, which are monies set aside for sort of payout of compensated absences when people retire, as well as the contingent reserve that we set aside each year. Other areas of underspending were in the fire department, community development, parks and traffic engineering in terms of dollar amounts. And then you can see in terms of percentage of budget, some of the smaller agencies were also under budget. So that underspending was about 2% of the overall general fund budget. Much of this, it can be explained by the vacancy rate. While that vacancy rate is coming down, it still remains elevated. And so agencies were underspending as a result of that. And then we also had some an anomaly in the community development budget because there was a charging of ARPA costs to the grants fund rather than to the general fund. And then you can just see these expenditure variances by functional area rather than by agency again. Focus primarily in the miscellaneous area for the two reasons I mentioned before, as well as in parks and community development. All right, so turning to the fund balance and the 2025 outlook in the general fund. So as I mentioned, that fund balance is at 27% of the budget because revenues exceeded expenditures by about $20 million, and then we had a net increase in the unassigned balance due to a reduction in the assigned balance. So we had applied fund balance in the 2024 budget that was not used. So that changed. I talked about the life and insurance disability, and then that new GASB Governmental County Standards Board provision related to compensated absences meant that the way that we recalculate our liability changed, and that actually increased the unassigned balance by about $1 million. So while we're at 27%, that's a very strong level of reserves. I'll just mention that as part of the five-year plan that the council adopted as part of the 2025 budget, the expectation is that that fund balance, that unassigned fund balance, will be spent down to help balance budgets over the next few years. Just diving a little bit further into the fund balance history, again, it's been, as we've mentioned in previous meetings, it's really a combination of the higher investment earnings along with underspending due to vacancies. A reminder that the fund balance is a key element of our AAA debt rating. And I'll just mention that, sort of the median percentage of budget for AAA issuers like ourselves is having fund balance above 25% of the budget. So our policy goal of 15% is somewhat low. Where we're at right now is kind of the average for AAA issuers for like ourselves. I mentioned that we have incorporated using fund balance in the five-year outlook, and we do anticipate using fund balance to close the gap that we'll talk about for the upcoming 2026 budget. Turning to 2025, a preliminary outlook, we do expect investment income to again exceed budget at this point by around $4 million based on continued high interest rates, as we've seen recently by the Fed and its reaction to a considerable amount of economic uncertainty, and the mark-to-market is also positive year-to-date. In addition, we expect some additional ambulance fee revenues from a new state program that's called the General Emergency Medical Transport. We had factored in some amount of increase in the 2025 budget, but as more information has become available on this program, we expect amounts from both costs incurred in 2023 and 2024. Now, going forward, we do expect that there's the possibility of federal Medicaid budget changes as Congress works on the federal budget that could possibly impact this program. Building permit revenues are expected to be below forecast. We've seen some pretty dramatic slowing of building permit revenues, probably as the higher interest rates are starting to work their way through the development inventory. We do expect expenditures to be close to budget because of the 1% across the board reductions, as well as the increased salary savings. But again, we'll continue to monitor that, and we could have underspending in those miscellaneous appropriations as we did in 2024. We will come back with much more detail using our mid-year projection process at the July 22nd Finance Committee meeting. We'll also be looking at options to increase the expenditure restraint. That's the state program where the city receives $7 million to, if it holds its increase in spending above a certain level. We do have some room in 2025, and we may need to address any needs in the enterprise, some of the enterprise funds or in the internal service funds, such as fleet. We also will look at transferring money for capital projects to perhaps slightly reduce the need for debt in our debt issuance coming up later this summer. And we'll have, as you probably remember, both mid-year and year-end appropriations, with that mid-year appropriation being under consideration at that July 22nd meeting. So now we'll turn to 2026. And the outlook for that, I'll talk a little bit about the budget calendar, cost to continue assumptions, as well as the budget gap. So some of the key dates, a reminder of that, in our capital and operating budgets, we had a started the capital budget in March, and we had the kickoff for the operating budget a week ago. Those capital budget requests are already in from the agencies and are available on the finance budget website. And the operating budgets are due in mid-July. We've started the briefing process on the capital budgets. The operating budget briefings with the agencies will occur in mid-August. And the capital budget will be introduced to council in early September, operating budget in early October. And the finance committee will have 2 days of meetings on each of the capital and operating budgets to hear from agencies about what's in each of those budgets, be able to ask questions, and so on. Finance Committee meets at the end of September and the end of October to amend each of those budgets. The full council has the amendment opportunity at the end of October, early November, and then the council meets in second week in November to adopt the budget and set the property tax levy. Just as a reminder, the budget process continues through the entire year, and we work on this cost to continue estimates that we'll talk about in a little more detail. And that started in April and goes through May with the budget team working with agencies on identifying the costs necessary to maintain current service levels into the upcoming year. We have the request processes that I talked about, and then the executive budget for both capital and operating are developed in the late summer. And then we go through the council adoption process in September, October, and November. A reminder on the five-year outlook that was identified as part of the 2025 budget. The graph that you see here shows the expected gap by year and how it will be met, with a significant share of that addressed through the approved levy limit referendum from November. And moving into 2026, another gap opens up on top of that 22 million of about 6 million. And then you can see how that grows over the next 5 years, and looking at fund balance to address that, as well as possible new special charges and other efficiencies and revenue adjustments over that time. So this is where we expect spending down some of that fund balance to get closer to that 15% policy minimum, as well as other strategies. The five-year plan will be updated each year. So we'll update it for the 2026 budget over the next few weeks, starting with inputting the cost to continue information. As I said, we're starting that process now. We are encouraging department and division heads to look at their budgets and look at their mid to long range budget needs. And as a part of that, looking at work plans, the long range facilities plan work that's underway, the results Madison, service indicators, projected service needs with population growth, information from the Imagine Madison plan, and so on. And we'll be, finance staff will be engaging with agencies on more of this long range planning later this year. It will not be a part of the budget submission from agencies, a conversation and dialogue will be starting on this over the next few months. So turning to the cost to continue, as mentioned a few slides ago, this really is the first step in developing the operating budget. And it's all about what's the cost to maintain current service levels. So we've updated revenue projections. We've taken out one-time funding that might have been used to balance the 2025 budget. We've done a pretty comprehensive look at personnel costs with salary and benefit projections, step and longevities by employee, as well as any negotiated increases. We do have placeholders for health insurance and Wisconsin retirement system cost increases, which will again be updated later this summer. And this is all based on how staff are allocated to different funding sources in all of the agencies. We've also updated the interdepartmental charges for the internal service work that's provided by fleet, as well as costs for insurance and workers' compensation and the city's cost allocation plan. In specific agencies, we've taken out any one-time funding or one-time expenses. We've fully updated any partial year funding for activities. We've built in any increases related to contracts for purchase services, such as software and so on. And then this was all determined through some pretty in-depth work between the budget staff and the agencies. So taking all that and putting it together, we're estimating expenditures will be a little over $456 million to continue current services. That's about 5.5% higher than the 2025 adopted budget. About $10 million of that, roughly $24 million increase is salary and benefits. Another $6.5 million is the anticipated need to provide a general fund subsidy to Metro to be sure their revenues and expenditures are in balance. We have a placeholder for debt service. And then we basically have a netting out in non-personnel costs with about a $1.3 million increase for software, as well as some costs in the library for shared services between libraries in different communities. And then we have an offset by removing one-time funds for homeless services that were supported by ARPA dollars in 2024. We've also added funding for two additional elections in 2026, which is about a little under $700,000 in staffing and services. So that's the expenditure side. On the revenue side, we estimate about $450 million, which is about 4.1% higher than the 2025 budget. Most of that is the allowable increase under the levy limit, which is a combination of the net new construction factor and the increase in debt service. We've added more to interest earnings based on continued high interest rates from the Federal Reserve. And we are decreasing building permit revenue as well as removing some one-time fund balance related to unsheltered operations. So the gap between those two is about $6.2 million. Delving a little bit more deeply into this, when we look at salaries and benefits, this does assume a 3% increase for general municipal employees. The protective services are based on negotiated contracts. And then this does include step and longevity adjustments for those employees that are eligible. The increase in the elections, clerk's office funding for election staffing. We got information from employee trust funds that the health insurance cost is going up 11.5%. We had put in a 5% rate increase for the Wisconsin retirement system. We are reducing the compensated absence escrow, again, based on actual spending. That was an area that I kind of called out in the 2024 year-end review where we've had some underspending there, so we've reduced that, and that's helped offset some of this growth in the salary and benefits costs. We have made an adjustment to budget efficiencies, and that's a 1% reduction required in prior years. We've changed that to a 0.75% reduction to really reflect higher costs that agencies have to manage within some of these cost to continue adjustments. And then there's some other cost of living adjustments for non-permanent wages. So these would be hourlies, overtime, salary savings, and so on. I mentioned the elections amount. The direct appropriations includes that debt service increase, as well as $52,000 for the state liaison, as well as some funding for some PSC rate case work. Purchase services, I mentioned $1.3 million for software. Most of that's in IT. There's also software contracts in police, community development, engineering, and finance that need to be funded based on existing contracts. Utility costs are up. You can see that, about $272,000. I mentioned the library. There's some costs there with contracts between various Dane County library systems, some database costs, and then annualizing the cost of their Dream Bus operations. And I talked about the ARPA funding for unsheltered homeless. Metro subsidy will increase to about $25 million, and I'll go into a little more detail on that in a couple of slides. We are seeing kind of the end of one-time federal funding from the pandemic response for transit. We have adjusted the public health subsidy, again, based on various changes to cost to continue and estimates of equalized value. That's how we split the cost between the city and the county. The fleet budget is up about $1.8 million. Again, that's supplies and equipment and purchase services, personnel, and so on, which increases general fund billings by about $1.5 million. Most of what happens in fleet is paid for and supports general fund agency activities. And then we've updated the allocation method for interdepartmental charges to really reflect where assets are and where usage is occurring for fleet assets. The billings to agencies for the enterprise agencies under cost allocation was increased due to higher IT costs. And then we did make some adjustments to insurance and workers' comp, increased insurance billings by $1 million, but decreased workers' compensation by $1 million. You can see that the net general fund impact is a benefit to the general fund of those changes. So that's the cost to continue. Turning to kind of a time series on Metro Transit operating revenues to give a little bit of context to the increase in the subsidy that's projected for 2026. This graph is just of the Metro Transit revenues, actual revenues from 2017 through 2024, the budget for 25, and cost to continue for 26. You can see that the just starting from the bottom, which is the city subsidy, prior to the pandemic, it had reached about $15 million. During the pandemic years, there was no subsidy provided in 2020. Partial restoration of subsidy in 21 and 22. That was reduced again in 2023 to help Metro maximize federal pandemic dollars that were available, by allowing them to show a deficit and a need for revenue. And then we've returned in 24 to kind of the historic subsidy levels, and those are expected to increase. We have seen basically everything else other than federal aid remaining roughly constant. Another change has been in the partners, which is kind of the second part of the column graph from the top. The federal aid did increase in 2020 quite a bit, and in 2023, this is all pandemic related. Orange is the state aid, which doesn't really change much from year to year. And I'll also point out kind of near the bottom of each of the columns, the vehicle registration fee, which was first added in 2020. And that does not change much from year to year. Finally, we have seen some increase in partner revenues, but again, those partner revenues are supporting additional services and additional costs in each of these years as it expands. And then finally, fares, passes, and others. You can see prior to the pandemic, you know, a major share of revenues that has fallen off quite a bit. It has recovered somewhat, but not back to the level of the pre-pandemic. So that gives a little bit of background on the need for, or the projection for the subsidy level for 2026. Wanted to provide a little bit of background on the Expenditure Restraint Incentive Program. It used to be called the Expenditure Restraint Program. The legislature just changed it in the last budget. Basically, the program allows the city to qualify for $7 million in state aid if it keeps the increase in its budget, excluding debt service, its general fund budget, below the consumer price index plus 60% of net new construction. The city has qualified for this payment each year since its inception in the early 1990s. The estimated growth limit for 2026, so that combination of CPI and 60% of net new construction, is 4%. But when we look at our cost to continue in the general fund, excluding debt service, we have a total of $381.6 million. The maximum allowed to qualify for ERIP is $1 million lower than that. So we will have to look at re-estimates and other changes in the executive and in the final 2026 budget to be sure that the city can qualify for that $7 million ERIP payment. So bottom line here is that cost to continue is more than what we're able to do to qualify for ERIP. We'll have to make some changes in the executive and final budget. And then just a reminder on the property tax levy limits, or levy limits as we call them, the maximum allowable property tax levy for 2026 is starts with that net new construction factor, which right now we're estimating to be about a little under 2.2%. And that's really the ratio of the amount of net new construction, so new buildings in the city, the value of those divided by the entire property value in the city. So that maximum levy is the actual levy for 2025 plus that net new construction factor multiplied by the actual levy less the GO debt service. We add back the GO debt service for 2026. We'll have those figures final after the August debt sale. And then there are other minor adjustments, very minor, a few hundred thousand dollars for one of them is refunded, rescinded taxes. Another component of the levy limit is the ability to carry forward unused levy limit authority from one year to the next. So when we look at 2027, the unused levy limit authority from 2026 would be moved if the council, mayor and council decide to not use all the levy limit authority, that would be carried forward to the 2027 budget. However, the state legislature, state law puts a limit on how much can be carried forward. The first half a percent of carry forward, which is about $1.6 million, can be approved to be used in the 2027 budget with a majority vote. The maximum that can be carried forward is 1.5%, which is $4.8 million. And that difference between 0.5% and 1.5% requires a 3/4 vote to use in the 2027 budget. So any unused levy limit authority above 1.5% cannot be used in future years. There is no way to access it. So that's a little background on cost to continue. I'll turn now to the 2026 budget guidance, which was a part of the mayor's kickoff of the 2026 operating budget last week. Basically, 2026 will be a cost to continue budget. Agencies will not have to submit reduction scenarios as part of their request. And the baseline budget will continue to have a 3% annual salary savings. As I mentioned earlier, that budget efficiency, the 1% that was put into place in the 2024 budget, will be reduced to 0.75%, with that 0.25% being available for agencies to address maybe rising costs in other parts of their budget. Supplemental requests will be allowed, but in very limited circumstances. So compared to last year, what's staying the same is the key dates fall roughly in the same part of the calendar of the year. The components of the proposals will stay the same. And also, as we've asked agencies to do, use their results Madison information, data from the data engagements to look for efficiencies in delivering services. What's new compared to the 2025 budget is no reduction proposals, that reduction in the budget efficiency, and limiting any supplemental requests to only to those areas that may need to staff new facilities or to replace one-time revenues for ongoing programs. The budget guidance to enterprise agencies, so that would be, for example, a water utility, parking utility, Monona Terrace, Metro, and so on. They'll submit operating budget plans consistent with their revenue projections for 26. If they project revenue shortfalls, they'll have to present a base budget that includes expenditure reductions. If they are proposing rate increases, those should be looked at through an equity lens and consider resident ability to pay. And agencies will have to explain the components of that increase and what efforts have been made to reduce expenses before increasing rates. Agencies that receive subsidies from other funds, for example, transit from the general fund or Monona Terrace from the room tax fund, will need to look at their spending levels very closely and look at perhaps reducing expenditures based on constraints on the funds providing the subsidy. Turning now to salary savings, I mentioned that a few times throughout the presentation. It's really a way that we try to reflect position turnover and vacancies in agency budgets. All agencies have a salary savings budget, basically a negative number for salary savings. An example of how that's calculated, we take permanent wages. In this case, let's say it's $100,000. We multiply that by 3%. That's $3,000. And we put that into the salary savings line as a negative. So their total available for their salaries will be $97,000. We've seen in terms of permanent wages and the underspending in years 2021 through 2024 has ranged from about 4 to 6%. So we feel that the 3% citywide average salary savings is consistent with underspending trends. We will have a tiered structure as we started in 2024, where smaller agencies will not have a salary savings because their turnover is less, and may have any sort of salary savings would have a higher impact on their budget. And then it increases based on size of the agency, with the largest agencies having a 4% salary savings target. Turning now to the budget efficiencies, the 2024 budget, as I mentioned, introduced this 1% across the board reduction for the general fund, library fund, and fleet funded agencies. 1% cut was based on underspending trends from 2019 through 2022, which is about a 3.2% average. We've seen that come down, and in 2024, the underspending was about 1.6%, and we responded in that in the 2024 budget, and we're continuing to monitor that in 2025, and you can see the trend there in the unspent funding below budget by about how it's peaked in 21 and 22 and has now come down to about 1.6%. So that is a quick overview of those two areas. Some of the other considerations in the budget is agencies are asked that their requests be aligned with citywide priorities. And you can see in those areas, racial equity, social justice, sustainability, and work with equity teams in each agency to advance equity goals and work with the sustainability staff on ways to incorporate that into budget requests. And then again, asking agencies to use their results Madison data to examine their services, to find opportunities for innovation, and to look for ways to identify and implement cost savings, as well as any interagency coordination that may help with furthering efficiency. So that's a quick run through of 2024, 2025, and the 2026 cost to continue and outlook. This is the calendar for briefing you on the 2026 budget, highlighted today. On the 28th, we'll talk to you about the debt parameters resolution. We expect to issue debt in mid-August. And then we'll be back with the operating requests at the end of August. And we'll have those briefings that I mentioned and amendment days in September, as well as in October on the operating budget. So with that, I will stop sharing and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dave. That was a pretty fast run through a lot of information. Are there questions for Dave? Alder Evers?
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Dave, for, yes, a very informative presentation with indeed lots of information. Could you turn back to the slide about the five-year plan real quick, if you don't mind? Or if we don't.
I'm working on it. Yep, I got it right here.
I wonder if you could address just briefly what your thoughts are about how the five-year plan might be adjusted in recognition of what seems, if I heard you correctly, $16 million in interest income that was unanticipated, not projected initially, and a $8 million reduction in expenses. It seems like then in that additional money for the fund balance could perhaps, say, in 2027, mitigate the need for special charges in that year, that we might have more monies that we could allocate in that fiscal year and not burden our residents with additional special charges in that year. Is that possible? Is that one way in which the five-year, it looks like this five-year outlook hasn't yet changed at all. This was the same five-year outlook that we looked at last year. So I'm wondering if you think that this means that we would have more fund balance that we could allocate starting in 2027 instead of the rather small amount of, it looks like just $1 million in 2027.
Yeah, thanks for that question. You're right. We have not updated the outlook yet. This is the outlook that we put together a year ago. We did forecast close to the fund balance level that I just described for 2024. It's slightly higher than what we did estimate at that time. So there's a possibility that more fund balance could be applied in those out years. We do, however, expect that the gaps will get bigger than what we have here. We're seeing some of the costs going up perhaps faster than what we estimated a year ago. And so we will be back to you at a future meeting, either later in probably the later meeting in July or in August, to have all these numbers updated. So there might be the possibility of, changing the special charges number going forward. I will kind of remind the entire committee that using fund balance is a one-time source of revenue, whereas the special charges are a permanent or an ongoing amount. And so we have to keep that impact on the structural gap in the subsequent years in mind as we look to using fund balance versus permanent revenue increases to balance the budget going forward. But yeah, you're absolutely right. We need to, and we will be updating these numbers, and fund balance could perhaps play a somewhat larger role than what we had in this original five-year outlook.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. At some point, it seems like if there is a windfall, if we have additional monies available because of increased interest income or expenditures that did not amount to what we projected, that money, while it is one-time money, it's money that we did not anticipate and that we could allocate it wisely and not just, use that cushion wisely, but not just say, okay, now we're up 25%. And that's really where, we need to be for our AAA rating. I'm just leery of dipping into special charges if there is another option. I'll just say that and leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Elder. I think the other thing we all have to keep our eyes on is what happens at the federal level and what impact that will have. Other Figueroa Cole questions?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Dave. For this slide, God, I can't read my own handwriting. Oh, I found it. Okay, for this slide about the $7 million formula, I forgot the term that it was used there.
Expenditure restraint.
Yes, that. Where does that $7 million go? Is that a general fund or is that allocated for specific things on the budget?
That's a general fund revenue. That's a state aid, like shared revenue and things like that, that we receive.
So this is in addition to the regular shared revenue that we get yearly? Or is this the shared revenue?
It's a part of the shared revenue total that we get from the state. Part of it is the county and municipal aid, the municipal aid amount that we receive. And this is an adjunct program to that, which where we get a $7 million payment if we hold our increase in spending to that maximum amount that I explained on that slide. But that is a revenue to the general fund. We've been getting around $7 million, since the program's inception in the early 90s as a part of general fund revenues.
Is this part of the 8.1 share revenue that we got last year?
No, it's separate.
It's addition to that. Okay, that's what I wanted to understand. Yeah. Thank you. And for the Metro increase, is this another one of those instances where we swap funding, or is that going to be a continuous increase on the subsidy?
We expect that to be a continuous increase.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Alder. President Vetiver, questions?
I couldn't make my mouse move, sorry. Thank you, Mayor. Dave, I think I'm gonna sound like a broken record. I think I ask you these questions every year, but I'm gonna ask again. So we have been planning for a long time to move to a results-based budgeting, and I'm just wondering where that is in process.
So you probably recall that in the 2025 budget, we made some significant changes to agency services, and we updated what we call our chart of accounts to match all of that. It's a pretty significant effort. That's really laying the groundwork for kind of a results-oriented, outcome-oriented budgeting process. Another element of that is the data engagements that the data team is working on with each of the agencies. We expect to wrap up those sort of cohorts by the end of 2026. And we're also in the midst right now, we just brought on board a consultant to help us develop an RFP for a data warehouse, which will help to put all of this information together so that we can use it as a decision-making tool for agencies and then be able to kind of present key data points with the budget to help with the decision-making on the budget. And, you know, we're probably looking at, you know, a 4 to 5 year horizon to get to that.
And then the second question I always ask you is, when do we get to transition to a 2 year budget instead of 1 year budget?
I don't expect that to happen anytime soon. That's a pretty big lift to accomplish that. And, you know, the effort associated with what I just described with Results Madison and results oriented, outcome based budgeting is, you know, taking a lot of staff time. I think the other thing to keep in mind with a 2 year budget is, you know, we have to do the levy limit every year. We have to do the expenditure restraint calculation every year. And as we've seen, the exogenous impacts on the city can be significant in a 1 year period, whether it's a run up in interest rates or it's a pandemic or something like that. I do think, I think your question kind of leads on that, which is there are benefits to a 2 year budgeting process. I think the other, you know, in terms of time spent and things like that, the other thing we'd have to keep in mind is, you know, the change in the Alder terms and how does that interact with budget development and a 2 year budget. So a lot of policy considerations, state aid and, you know, levy limit calculations and things like that it's definitely like on our mind, but I don't see it happening anytime soon, but something we could start to move to over the next several years.
And then I have another question. Go ahead.
Sorry, President Vitter, I just wanted to add that in my budget instructions to agencies this year, I did ask those agencies that have been through the data engagement to be using those data in their budget submissions, so that they're starting to move those muscles and get used to making both budget decisions, but also management decisions on the basis of that data.
That's great. So the health insurance costs, are those set? Is there any possibility that if Medicaid rates if Medicaid gets cut from the federal level and it impacts health insurance costs locally, like, are we going to get all of a sudden halfway through the year, hey, we're going to increase your rates? Or is that rate like, no, that's set for the year, but we should be ready for bigger increases next year?
Thanks for that question. So as you know, we participate in the local government health insurance plan that's operated by the state's Department of Employee Trust Funds. And they work with their actuary and consultants in setting those rates, and they do that through negotiations with the providers. And so the providers in Dane County are courts, group health, and dean. And so those rates are set. I think in doing those analyses, they look at those sort of external impacts, such as possible Medicaid cuts. Again, everything we've seen with Medicaid cuts is those aren't going to hit immediately. Those will be sort of future year issues. And so we could see kind of knock-on effects from Medicaid cuts impacting the employee health insurance rates in future years, but I think now they're kind of, set for. I don't expect that we'd see mid-year changes or anything like that. ETF's never done anything like that. So, no, but that is a pretty significant increase. We just got what those actual rates are by the health insurance plans, and we will be getting a more precise number over the next few weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Alder Oshowitz, questions?
Yep. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Director Schmidtke. I just wanted to ask about the ERIP. Is that, if we go over the amount that the state has set, is that we lose all of that $7 million, or does it scale down as we go over?
It's all or nothing. We lose it all if we go $1 over.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Any other questions for Dave on this item? Alder Verveer?
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Dave, for the comprehensive presentation. A couple of perhaps random questions. The first one is I appreciated the historical information you shared on fund balance. Do you recall historically what the high percentage mark, if you will, was prior to the data that you shared this afternoon? I know you go back a few years. Do you recall the data prior to the 2022 history that you shared today?
Well, I showed a graph as well, Alder Verveer, that goes back to
the 90s.
The mid-90s. So,
yeah, it was just hard for me to read.
Yeah, so the maximum prior to kind of the run-up that we've seen now was about a little over 19% of the budget, and that was in 2003, it looks like.
Thank you. Take a closer look at that with reading glasses. Mm-hmm. The other random question I had is an update on the compensation study. The last recollection I recall us receiving, at least in this venue, from Aaron Hilson was that I thought perhaps it would be this quarter. that we would have some results to share, or at least initial results to share from Baker Tilly. We obviously haven't seen that yet. Is it? And then obviously reading the mayor's operating budget instructions at the kickoff a week ago today, it sounds like the compensation study data won't really be available or used to inform the 2026 budget. Is that a fair assumption or no?
I think that's fair, Alder. They ran into, I mean, perhaps inevitably, ran into a few delays, and we asked for a couple of things, so we had some back and forth. I am expecting to get briefed on it, I think, maybe next week, but I can't, I'd have to check my calendar. I have a briefing scheduled, and then I expect that we would be able to move on to the next phase, but they are not yet in their final phase.
I see. So my premise. Go ahead, sir.
I mean, at any rate, the plan has always been to finalize the study, present it, and I don't think we really anticipated that we would be including acting on it in this budget. But I do anticipate that we will be acting on it in future budgets potentially.
Yes. Thank you for confirming that. My understanding was the assumption was always that, of course, would have to be phased in over many, many years, fiscal years, many budgets. I was just curious again if agencies might have any compensation data study to support their agency budget requests submitted this summer, but it sounds like no. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And then perhaps lastly, Dave, and this might be a great segue to our final agenda item tonight in your presentation on the federal budget update for us would be if you could share what you know in terms of state budget update as a longtime participant and certainly observer of the state biennial budget process. I know obviously Joint Finance Committee has hit the pause button and canceled their last meeting last Thursday, but did they take any action at Joint Finance, Dave, on state aid on intergovernmental revenue that would affect us at all in any way, shape, or form? Or have they not hit any of those fiscal bureau papers yet?
They, Alder Revere, they did some re-estimates, but did not materially affect any of the major sort of shared revenue programs. I think probably the big program that's still out there is the municipal services program. That's sort of a possibility, and the paper talks about some options for increasing that. The governor had about a 90% increase in that funding. Madison is the top recipient of that aid, and so any sort of progress on that would be beneficial to Madison, but the committee has not gotten to that point yet. And so that, I imagine, will be a part of, once they work out their differences, they have those big omnibus motions that look at school aid and, local county municipal aid and other issues like that.
Yeah, thank you. I read with interest the mayor's written budget message from last Monday that other communities, for example, Oshkosh, have been also arguing that they're undercompensated in terms of their state-owned properties and their jurisdiction. So it's nice to see that there might be a coalition forming around that issue. I don't know if you wanted to add anything on that score, Mayor.
Just that, we continue to work with our state lobbyists and laying the groundwork for progress. I think, as expected, we don't really think there'll be much in this state budget for us, but that we continue to lay the groundwork for future years and to build the coalition, not just around the municipal aids question, but on other things of interest to the city as well.
Thank you. Dave, do you, and just lastly, and maybe again, this is a good segue to the federal budget update next. Dave, historically, in terms of joint finance again, for local transportation aid, is that often also in an omnibus motion, or is that handled separately and that likely could be action we are more aware of sooner rather than later?
Alder Revere, you know, it really depends on how they kind of structure everything at the end. Sometimes they do an omnibus just on transportation, for example. You know, there's some major issues there with how to finance the state's transportation budget. I think the governor's budget had some, you know, pretty significant general fund transfers in there. Legislature's been doing that for a number of years. So it is all kind of interlocked with how they put together the overall general fund budget. And there's, you know, some pretty strong linkages between that and the transportation budget. So I imagine it could be one part of one big one or its own, but I would not expect it's resolved until the end of the process on, you know, on both the general fund and the transportation fund.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Alder. Any other questions for Dave on this item? Okay. Just also, Alder, wanted to remind you that we do have our state lobbyist presenting at CCEC on July 1st. So if anybody wants the full update from them, that's your chance. All right, then, seeing no additional questions on item 8, we'll move on to item 9, which is Legislature 86892, an update on federal executive orders and directives to pause federal grants and loans. Dave?
Thank you, Mayor. I will share my screen again. Can you all see that?
Yes.
Great, thank you. All right, so we are going to move through our sort of typical agenda if there's any legal update, and then the kind of the latest in terms of what we know on the federal budget. So with the legal update, I'll turn it over to Mike Haas if he has any information to share.
Thanks, Dave. Good afternoon, everyone. This will be fairly brief. I think the main update we wanted to provide was from about a week ago. There was a decision in one of the federal court cases. This was specifically related to a case that is filed in Rhode Island federal court, and I believe we talked to the committee about this when it was filed. It has to do with the Department of Transportation and a directive in April that the secretary issued to states and municipalities that receive federal transportation funds, which focused on immigration enforcement and advising that jurisdictions that did not cooperate with ICE or immigration enforcement efforts or that hindered those would be subject to having federal transportation funds withheld. The court issued a decision last week, I guess it was on Friday, issued a preliminary injunction which prohibits the federal government from implementing that directive, and with a few provisions, but basically it prohibits the federal government from enforcing that condition that was set forth in the transportation secretary's directive, prohibits the federal government from withholding federal funding based on that directive or taking any adverse action against any state entity or local jurisdiction, including barring those jurisdictions from receiving funds or making it ineligible for federal funding. So a couple of notes on this. You know, we've had some discussion about there's been a lot of attention paid lately to whether these federal district court decisions are nationwide orders or only specific to the parties. In this case, there are two factors. The state of Wisconsin was actually a party to the action. The Attorney General's office joined that lawsuit. And the court's decision specifically stated that it applied to the parties, the states, and the local jurisdictions in those states. So I believe that that's two reasons that we can point to that this would include the city of Madison. Now, I think as a practical matter, it doesn't change a whole lot as far as the city's approach, because our view has been that the city does not interfere with immigration enforcement action, that we have very limited role in that. The police department does have a standard operating procedure to direct officers as far as when they share information with immigration enforcement officials, or but we were never of the mind that that was a violation of any federal laws or that it was interfering with immigration efforts. So while on a practical level, it maybe does not change much for us, I think it does remove sort of one legal issue that would be an area of concern otherwise. Now, I will say this is a district court decision. It's likely that it's going to be appealed to a court of appeals, so it's maybe not the last word, but that is the main legal update we wanted to provide today. So I'll see if there's any questions about that. Otherwise, we are continuing to monitor the other cases that are out there.
Thank you. Attorney Haas, any questions on this one? Seeing none, then Dave, back to you for the grants. If there's anything.
Thanks, Mayor. So with the finance update, we'll walk through where the federal budget is at. And so the Senate Finance Committee, as you may have read in media accounts, has put out its version of the budget, which makes certain individual and business tax exemptions permanent, which were temporary in the House version, has a higher tax deduction for older taxpayers, more limited approach on deductions for tips. A major area of disagreement with the House is going to be on the state and local tax deduction. Some changes to how college endowments are treated. There's a longer phase out for certain clean energy credits. It expands work requirements under Medicaid to adults with older children. And it places maximums on Medicaid provider taxes, as well as prohibiting, depending on if it's an expansion state or a non-expansion state. And then does allow more flexibility on supplemental nutrition reductions. A few of these slides are from a presentation I watched from Moody's Analytics, and some of the concerns about the federal deficit under this legislation. And so this graph just shows that the deficit as a share of GDP had remained relatively constant prior to the pandemic. Obviously, a lot of expenditure outlays by the federal government to sustain the economy and help state and local governments, and as well as individuals, which drove the deficit quite a bit higher. It's returned to sort of close to kind of a 3% of GDP level. However, as we've seen, that federal debt percentage has increased pretty dramatically, first during the Great Recession of 2008, 2009, tax cuts that occurred in prior to 2020, the pandemic, and then the forecast under the sort of federal budget that's being worked on now is to push that deficit quite a bit higher. Another big area of concern is the amount of interest costs on that debt, which reached about 3% of GDP kind of through the 80s and early 90s, and then declined as interest rates fell pretty dramatically and remained relatively low. It's expected to become a much larger share of the federal budget and will potentially crowd out other programs to service that debt. This is a couple of slides that analyze the impact on household by income deciles. And this is just the change in resources under the bill alone, with the kind of the green part, the change in in-kind transfers, the blue being changes in federal taxes and cash transfers. And then the line is sort of the net of all of that. So it starts to see kind of a net benefit between the fourth and fifth decile of income, with the highest decile receiving the largest benefit in terms of dollar amounts. When we combine the federal budget with the proposed tariffs, 2025 tariff increases, with the impact of tariffs falling hardest on lower income individuals and families, really, it's the only decile that benefits is the highest under the combination of both of those policy factors. And then just a reminder that federal funds are a relatively small share of local government budgets, and that's the same with Madison. It does have a large impact on state government budgets, primarily through Medicaid, as you'll see in this pie chart to the right, income security programs, and then to a smaller extent to education, housing, and so on, with really Medicaid affecting the state budget, but then rippling through to, in Wisconsin, particularly county budgets, and then the sort of community effect of all of this in terms of requests for more services at the local level. We've been asked for some Madison impacts, and the staff here did a little bit of work on that, the extent they could find data. In terms of the Medicaid loss, we estimate about a little under 6,200 Madison residents would lose Medicaid coverage over the 10-year period, and that'll mainly fall on childless adults without disabilities. And that's about 2.2% of Madison's current population. We also looked at supplemental nutrition reduction impacts. Again, a little under 2,000 adult residents are at risk of losing that, and about 4,000 at risk of losing some amount. Like they could have a household member is a SNAP recipient. This includes the 1,952. Of the adult residents that could lose SNAP. That 1952 is about 0.8% of Madison's population, and the 4,000 is about 1.4%. The team also looked at impacts on hospitals, for example, uncompensated care and emergency room visits, mental health services, homeless services, crime rates, and so on. They took a look at that, but could not really find reliable estimates for our geographic area. So the next steps with the federal budget is that work continues in the Senate with a goal to pass that by July 4th. However, geopolitical events of the last few days may impact that. Again, as you've seen in media accounts, there's a lot of push by some elements to make more cuts to reduce the size of the deficit, while there's also concern about Medicaid cuts and the impacts on individuals, families, and state budgets. As I mentioned, the SALT deduction is a big area of difference between the two houses, as is the clean energy credit differences. Obviously, the budget needs approval by both houses. And the debt ceiling is expected to be breached. So that's what leads to a shutdown of the federal government. And that's sort of what they call the X date is expected to occur in August. We've talked a lot about, and the council adopted a resolution on this item, tax exemption on municipal bond interest. While it remains an option, neither house has really put anything forward on it, so it's unlikely to change. It should remain as under current law. All right, and with that, that is a quick presentation on current federal budget issues.
Thank you, Dave. Questions for Dave on this? If not, we will watch with somewhat bated breath as they proceed and try and take into account whatever it means for us. All right, that is the last item on our agenda today. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Moved and seconded to adjourn. Is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor of adjournment? Seeing no objection, we stand adjourned. Have a good evening, everyone.